Hello, kiddies. It's your old pal, the Crypt Keeper. And you're listening to Three Guys in a Flick. The good, the bad, and the gruesomely absurd.
Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. The show is about to begin.
This thing doesn't want to show itself. It wants to hide inside an imitation. It'll fight if it has to. But it's vulnerable out in the open. If it takes us over, then it has no more enemies. Nobody left to kill. And then it's won. Welcome back. You are listening to Three Guys in a Flick. This is where we review the good, the bad, and the absurd. Tonight's episode, John Carpenter's The Thing. Beware, spoilers. Coming to you from a remote research facility in Antarctica, whose idea was this again?
I thought we could use a vacation.
Oh, for fuck's sakes. Anyways, my name is Don. And to my right, we have our comic book guy, John.
I know you gentlemen have been through a lot, but when you find some time, I'd rather not spend the rest of this podcast tied to this fucking couch.
All right, all right. The professor still has the night off. Joining us tonight, we have a special guest. This is Silas. Silas is one of our, what would you call him, comic book guy, one of our talent when we make our 48 movies.
I would call him a friend.
Oh, would you?
Yeah.
I was going to call him a friend of the show, but hear tell, he's only listened to one episode and he hasn't even finished said episode.
So you're saying he's a friend with taste.
Whoa, you're supposed to support us.
Oh, that's right.
Hey, don't ever tell anybody outside of the family what you're thinking again.
But I'm trying to get onto his podcast.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, I think so.
Anyways, this is Silas. Welcome to the show, Silas.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here in the Antarctic.
Nice. Nice. I hope you brought some warm clothes.
Yeah, because it's 40. It's negative 40 outside.
Yeah, and you got to stay in the shed until we're ready for you.
Yeah. Isn't that where the gimp is, or is he in the box?
He's in the box. Yeah, the gimp has the night off as well.
Okay.
The thing comes to us tonight via the Bronco helmet submitted by one of our listeners, Ben C. I'm sure he threw this in there because he absolutely loves The Thing. And you know what? We're going to give it a shot. And Ben, this one's for you.
Who doesn't love their thing?
Well, good question. Good question. But I think we might be talking about two separate things.
Oh, okay.
Released on June 25th, 1982, The Thing was directed by John Carpenter. Screenplay by Bill Lancaster. Based on the book Who Goes There? By John W. Campbell. And it stars Kurt Russell, Wilford Brimley, T.K. Carter, David Kennan, Keith David, Richard Dysart, Charles Halloran, Peter Maloney, Richard Mauser, Joel Polis, David Moffat, Thomas Waits, and a bunch of other aliens intent on assimilating the human race.
How'd this movie do, Don?
This movie was made for $15 million, and it brought in $20 million.
I was surprised for a John Carpenter movie that it didn't have a much better reception.
Well, he wasn't John Carpenter yet.
Right? No, in fact, this is his first studio movie. And then after this, he was contractually signed on to do three more movies, but because this one did so poorly, he never did it. He was actually supposed to do Firestarter after this.
Mm. Oh.
Yeah. But he goes on to do Christine. So, I mean, there's that.
I don't know who was the winner then. I don't know.
Did you ever see Christine?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
No, because I read the book.
Yeah.
What about Firestarter?
I did like that one. I never read the book. That's probably why.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. I was a fan of both. I liked them both.
Like, I like it. If I can forget about the book, I kind of like it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of elements I like about it, but I think it needs to be a TV show.
Firestarter does?
No.
Oh,
Christine.
I don't know. It's pretty cut and dry. Hey, there's a podcast out there. Three Guys in a Flick, right?
I think they did an episode on Christine.
I think they did too. Yeah. So
did you know that this was a con- John Carpenter's one of his favorite movies that he did.
Yeah.
That, and I guess it was considered the first of what he calls the Apocalypse Trilogy.
Now, this is new for me. What is the Apocalypse Trilogy?
The Apocalypse Trilogy is made up of three of his films. Can you guess what three films those were?
Prince of Darkness and In the Mouth of Madness.
You are correct, sir.
Are they actually related to this?
No, but what they all have in common is that basically Earth is destroyed. They're all like the end of the world movies.
So it's kind of like the Cornetto trilogy, but different?
Yeah, he just calls it the Apocalypse trilogy because he's destroying the world in different ways.
Interesting. Interesting. John Carpenter's been around for a while, and he is a very well-known director and responsible for some absolute classics. Do you guys have a favorite John Carpenter movie?
He did Halloween, didn't he?
Yes, he did the original Halloween.
That's the one I would pick right now as my favorite.
Yeah. What about you there, guy?
It'd be his Roddy Piper film.
They Live.
Oh,
they Live.
Yeah. Which includes an actor from this film.
Yeah. Pete David.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of my favorites as well. Mm-hmm. I really like that one.
Wait, which one?
They Live.
No.
Which Keith actor? David was in that one.
That's Keith David? Okay.
Yeah, because he's the one that fought Roddy. I don't want to spoil it, but...
Why not? I said spoilers.
Okay. He's the one that helps Rocky...
Not that movie.
He helps Roddy Piper throughout the whole movie, and then at the end, he's an asshole.
Yeah, well...
But it's one of the best fight scenes in any movie, because it's one of the longest fight scenes in any movie.
What about Big Trouble in Little China?
Was that John Carpenter?
Yes, it was.
For real?
For reals.
Well, I'm changing my answer then. Big Trouble.
Oh, see? I can do this all day long. What about Starman? No? Nobody?
Not better. Not more. That's a bit eclectic. That's a little more eclectic than I thought.
Yeah, but he's definitely got some great titles in there, and I'm a big fan of John Carpenter. I will always have a soft spot in my heart for Big Trouble and Halloween. Mm-hmm. So
he really likes Kurt Russell.
Oh, yes.
He's like, if I'm going to hire a boring actor, I'm going to hire Kurt Russell.
Can you name all of the Kurt Russell, John Carpenter vehicles? No?
Big Trouble.
That's one.
The Thing.
That's two.
Escape.
That's three. And?
Overboard.
That's not John Carpenter, but I like where your head's at.
He didn't do any of those Santa movies, did he?
No, John Carpenter did not. It's actually Escape from L.A.
I was going to say, is it the other Escape movie?
It's the other Escape movie, yeah. So... Yeah. Do you know what else John Carpenter likes to do is he likes to do his own scores. Did you know he didn't do the score for this film?
And it's one of the things that got most criticized about this movie is that people did not like the score of this movie.
Which is ironic because the guy they got, Ernie Marconi, he did the score in John Carpenter fashion. So there was that heavy synth and it felt a lot like a John Carpenter film. And you're right. They fucking panned him for it.
Well, I'm not one of those people who really listens to the music unless it really grabs me. You and Ken tend to really get into a score of a movie. What did you think of the score?
Did you cry?
No.
I cried a lot.
Did you?
In Rocky. You did.
I did. Well, fuck, have you watched Rocky? When's the last time you watched Rocky?
I feel like it's been too long.
All right. Well, when you go and watch it, then we'll have this conversation. The score for The Thing, I thought it was fine, knowing that Carpenter didn't do it, but it felt like a Carpenter score, so it was all right.
I just kind of made, like I said, I don't really get into it, but I kind of felt it was forgettable.
I didn't realize there was any music in the whole thing.
Yeah. Oh really? Yeah,
did not notice.
Yeah. Let's talk about this cast a little bit. The one and only Kurt fucking Russell.
Do you know that he was one of the last picked to be in this movie? Like they originally wanted like Harrison Ford or Clint Eastwood. Or, just...
They wanted somebody interesting?
Yeah, they wanted all kinds of other... Roy Schneider was up for it. All these other people, they couldn't get anybody, so at the last minute, they picked Kurt Russell.
What do you mean more interesting? Do you not think Kurt Russell is interesting?
Kurt Russell is not a good actor.
Are you fucking kidding me right now?
He's entertaining, but he is so monotonous.
Oh my gosh.
He's got a style, but it's definitely... His style is not good. Like, is that like... Yeah.
Kurt Russell is so fucking cool that it makes up for his bad acting. And I wouldn't even call it bad acting. I call it, getting into the character. That being said there, Mr. Silas, do you have a favorite Kurt Russell role by chance?
Well, I think it'd have to be Big Trouble Little China is the only one that's the one that pops into my head. That and Overboard, I've seen both of those films about 800 times.
Okay.
Because HBO as a kid, Sure. They would just replay over and over again. I'm trying to think of a modern film that he did.
One of the things I think came up on the last time we were doing a Kurt Russell movie, or we're having a Kurt Russell discussion, and it might be kind of going in the direction you were talking, Silas. Kurt Russell plays Kurt Russell in every movie. He's like the same character in almost every movie. Now, I love his character. I love the way he presents it. But, you know, who he was in, you know, Big Trouble in Little China is the same guy he was in this movie. I mean, it's almost like you're seeing the same character every time.
Oh, I strongly disagree with that, good sir.
He's always that wisecracking guy.
He wasn't really wisecracking in this.
Not a little bit. He was kind of drinking and wisecracking, making comments.
Not anywhere close to the caliber of Jack Burton or Gabriel Cash or any other of the characters he plays. I think
Kurt Russell moment in this film. What was the moment of that he drew you in this film? Like was there a moment of his acting was like, oh man, that's why they hired him.
You know, that's a really good question, and I think I would have to go with when he takes the stick of dynamite and goes, fuck you too.
For me, it's when he's playing the chess game and he loses and he just throws the drink into the thing and says, what, cheating bitch or beat, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Again, cool.
Yeah. You didn't answer the question, though. What is your favorite Kurt Russell vehicle?
Oh, I like him in a lot of things. I think Tango and Cash pops into mine, and I loved him in Hateful Eight. Death Proof, anything that he's doing now, he's just so fucking cool. All right, so outside of Kurt Russell, are there...
Wilford Brimley.
What?
Wilford Brimley in this movie.
I know, I was just... If you would let me finish my fucking statement or question...
I was excited about him.
All right, well, let's talk about some motherfucking Wilford Brimley.
I mean, doesn't he do oatmeal and diabetes or something on TV? All those commercials?
I don't know if he does it in... More. Yeah, or in that order. But
this was the youngest I've ever seen him.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I was like, what? Because in 4 years, so that was 1982, this came out. 4 years later is like Cocoon, right?
Yeah, 86.
Like, he aged about 40 years in those, like.
I know. And what's funny in this, I guess he's actually only like 40. Motherfucker looks 60.
And you know what, like, unnerved me about his role?
What?
The no mustache.
I kind of was digging it.
I needed the Wilford Brimley mustache.
I'm so used to it. I was kind of digging without it.
I was when I realized his voice, when I heard the voice, I was like, that's Wilford Brimley. Oh my gosh. I don't think I've seen, I didn't picture him in a horror movie or like, it was wonderful.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah. I thought he was great. And shamelessly, and I will fucking own it, you know what my favorite Wilford Brimley role is?
Was it the one with the family?
No, but that was a TV show, and yeah. I used to love that show, but no. My favorite Wilford Brimley role is when he plays Jean-Claude Van Damme's uncle in the 1993 classic Hard Target.
And he has the Cajun accent.
Yep.
No. I liked him in The Firm.
Oh, he's fantastic in The Firm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good movie, by the way. Good movie. Anyone else there strike your fancy?
There
guys?
Was a couple other that I recognized, but I don't know what they were in. Of course, there's Keith David. Which we just talked about from They Live. I know I've seen him in other things. Do you know what other things he's been in?
Oh, he shows up all the time and stuff.
He's
one of those guys, that guy from that thing.
Uh-huh, right? Absolutely. I remember him from Requiem of a Dream. Did you ever see that?
No.
Fuck, yeah, don't do it. They Live, and just a lot of stuff. He was in a lot of action movies as well.
Well, and who's the guy who played captain in this? The captain?
Yeah,
the
Gary. Mayor? Yeah.
Like Gary?
He's been in a few things. He usually plays a military guy, I think, in most movies.
He was the president of the United States in which Harrison Ford movie?
Patriot Games? No. Was it Patriot Games?
Patriot Games.
Okay.
He says, I am the president of the United States. And Harrison Ford goes, how dare you, sir?
He's also, is he the farmer in, no, that's not him.
In which film? I'll tell you if you're right or wrong.
Pig in the City.
Oh, yeah, no, that is the guy from iRobot.
The guy who played the cook on the roller skates.
Yeah.
I've seen him in a bunch of things, but I never know his name or what he's been in.
That was T.K. Carter, and he was in a lot of TV shows at the time. Yeah. He was a stand-up comic.
I know, I definitely recognized him.
Yeah. Richard Dysart, the guy who played the doc.
Okay.
Does he look familiar to you at all?
He did look familiar. I think, was he in the St. Elsewhere?
Yes, and L.A. Law.
Yes. Yeah.
So it seemed like it was TV actors.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the cast, a couple of them look familiar, but it was definitely mostly from TV shows.
I like looking them up online because they just show their like most recent headshots.
Yeah.
And they're all like 90.
Are they all still alive?
Like, I can't recognize any. No, some of them are definitely dead based off of.
So the guy who wrote this, Bill Lancaster, do you know who his dad was?
Not a clue.
Burt Lancaster.
I was going to say, that makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't know that. It's crazy.
So a theme of this movie is mistrust and paranoia. Is there other movies out there that you can think of like might be your favorite movies about mistrust and paranoia?
Oh, I'm sure there's plenty.
Isn't that all movies?
Well, the ones that I came up with that I could think of that were like my favorites were Get Out, where basically you can't trust anybody, Saw, The Sixth Sense, Scream, any of the Scream movies, and Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, yeah.
I thought they all kind of fit the similar theme of this movie, which is you just can't trust anybody in the movie.
After watching The Thing and all of the themes that it was going through with the mistrust and the paranoia, it did remind me a lot of Alien.
Silas, did you have a mistrust movie you can think of?
Well, any Agatha Christie film, right? Yeah. Like, I think that's the mystery of
true.
It. It's sort of it's a whodunit,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Wrapped up in a alien.
You want to know the mistrust movie that fucked me up good as a kid?
Yes.
Cruel Intentions.
No, but that was a heartbreaker. Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Oh.
The one that came out in the 70s?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I thought, as a young kid, I thought everybody was a pod person.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
and you were right.
Yeah.
He very well may be. I know. I think that is a fear that really resonates with people is the whole pod people concept. I mean, that would fucking suck.
Yeah. And just if you think about like this movie, it's almost, you know, they're obviously different aliens but it's kind of got the same feeling to it.
Sure.
One of the things we mentioned earlier is I was surprised that this movie didn't do better, you know, because it was a John Carpenter movie, but you guys pointed out, well, this is one of his first ones. Well, he also was dealing with a time when E.T. came out, and he claims, John Carpenter says that one of the reasons why he thinks this movie didn't do so well is because people didn't want mean aliens at the time. They didn't want the evil aliens. They wanted the nice, friendly, you know, let's take them home and feed them Reese's Pieces aliens.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you're going against Steven Spielberg as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's hooey.
Do you?
Look at all the other movies that were... He's name-dropping the one nice alien. There's one alien. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it's a horror film?
And maybe people don't really like... it's
a really gross horror film. And like people at the don't time. Like
it? Yeah.
And maybe the lead actor was boring? Maybe there's a number of things that didn't like draw people into it. I know it's is it considered a classic now?
It's, oh yeah.
Like a cult.
There is a bit of a cult following to it.
Oh, it's more than a cult classic. I mean,
I actually thought it was an older film because I thought I'd always heard about The Thing.
Well, there's also
never seen it.
There's a Thing from Outer Space that came out in the 60s or 50s.
51. Yeah.
I don't think it's a fantastic film. So I'm not surprised it didn't do that great. It looks like a low budget horror. I mean, it's hard for me to put myself back then and go like, did it look low budget then, or did it look insanely amazing at
right.
the time? Now it looks low, but I don't know a time when this necessarily would have done great. If he had done it 5 years before, I don't know it would have done great.
Sure.
I think it probably did what it should have done.
Like, yeah.
I can see why people like the film, but I could also see why people would not recommend the film. So it's not like one of those... How do people not see the genius of this?
Right. And actually, people don't see the genius of this until years later. It gets critically panned. John Carpenter gets his feelings hurt, and it really shook him up because people did not like this film. They thought it was a gross-out film. They thought it was too violent. People probably weren't into a lot of horror. And yes, Steven Spielberg did give us a friendly alien. And if you had to choose, you probably went to go see the alien because Ridley Scott also drops Blade Runner at the same time. And that does very poorly. And both of them, Ridley Scott and John Carpenter, are like, fuck Spielberg.
Let us point out, though, E.T. is a fantastic film.
I'm not arguing right. with you. I'm not right. arguing that fact at all. If I had to watch E.T. or The Thing, I probably would pick E.T. 9 out of 10 times.
But here,
that's just me.
But would E.T. have been a better film if they had added flamethrowers?
Maybe. Maybe. I mean, fucking Spielberg took the guns out in the home video release. Why not put flamethrowers in their hands?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh. He replaced them with walkie-talkies.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so if you go watch E.T. now, when authorities get involved, they're all holding walkie-talkies, not guns.
My gosh. I had no idea. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what I felt like when I was watching the film was, I was like, because I had not seen it when it came out, or I hadn't seen it the subsequent years when people got into it, because I wasn't into horror. I wasn't going to watch it then. I was like, oh, this is probably how my daughter feels watching some of the movies I tell her, like when I made her watch Die Hard, and I was like, I'm going to blow her mind with Die Hard. She saw all the derivatives of Die Hard, so it wasn't impressive to her. I feel like, oh, I've seen all the things that this film influenced, so I'm not as impressed with what happened, because I'm like, yeah, I've seen this a bunch.
Yeah, well,
but that was the first time that this film had been done, like a film had been done in that way. So I get why it influenced so many people, but I had seen what it had influenced, right? Right. So that's why, like, it's like being kids today are not impressed by, you know, like an Elvis Presley, right?
Sure.
Like, yeah, because they got better music now.
Yeah, but, yeah, but it all came from somewhere, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
I would call better music.
You just showed your age there, guy.
As a movie maker yourself, Don, did you catch the subtle technique that they did in this movie to really highlight the alien?
The lighting?
They basically kept everything dark and drab, except when it came to showing the alien, he was bright and colorful.
Yeah, and gooey and slimy and yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of an interesting
thing. It was really gross for being... I was like, wow, I was cringing because it was like, this is really gross, but also going, it looks stupid because it's so old, right? And but that's impressive that I was like, I was both like, this is goofy and like, ugh, but I can't see it.
Well, let me ask you this real quick, Silas. Are you a fan of horror movies?
I always say that I'm not and I don't watch them, but I'm always watching them. Like, I'm always like reviewing them. I go like, oh, I'm not a big fan of horror. Well, except this one. I like a lot of the things that horror does, but it's not my first choice, except for some select movies that come out. And I'm like a movie called Abigail's coming out and I'm excited to see that. Uh-huh. I don't know why, but I'm just excited about that movie. Like there's individual horror movies I get excited for. I won't just turn on any horror the way I would like anything with a spaceship.
Sure. Sure.
So is it about that time, Don?
Why, yes, boys. It is about that time. Welcome to another edition of Master Movie Trivia. I am your reigning champ. You may call me the champ. I have compiled 5 questions and 5 questions only to test your knowledge on the movie we are reviewing. Each question could be worth multiple points, so if you know the answer, say it. And please wait until I finish each question. Let us begin. Question number 1. What is the number of the outpost our heroes are stationed at?
84.
42.
Nope. 31.
No idea.
31 is the correct answer. But 42
is good. Life, the universe, and everything. It's the answer.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. At the end of the film, our survivors share a drink. What are they drinking?
Gasoline.
Whiskey.
Whiskey is the correct answer.
Because there was actually gasoline in the bottle.
No, it wasn't.
John Carpenter has confirmed that when he was creating all of his little bombs and stuff, he had filled the bottle full of gasoline. And that's one of the ways you know that Keith David's character, Child, is the alien because he is drinking gasoline and he has no problem with it.
Wait, did Kurt McReady, did he not drink it?
No, he just hands on the bottle. He carries the bottle with him and then hands on the bottle. He drank out of the bottle.
It was a bottle of whiskey, though. Like the bottle.
It was
a bottle.
J&B.
That's whiskey. Something you could just make up, though. You could just make that up. Like
it's my internet stuff.
I know. And so I don't buy it for 2 seconds. Even I think if it's.
He said it.
You're going to give him the point?
Even if Carpenter said it, he could have made that up later because I know that because I direct too.
Yeah. And I am pretty sure. I wouldn't bet my paycheck on this, but I'm pretty sure Russell takes a drink. He has a glass. I'd have to go back and watch it. You can't confirm because you just read it.
I'm going to rewatch the ending anyway because I read about the alternate ending stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to see something else from that that he said.
Mm-hmm. All right. All right. But I like the discussion.
Yeah.
Way to bring it up.
So point goes to Silas.
Yes. 1-0. Question number 3. Besides MacReady, who's a helicopter pilot, Childs, who's the mechanic, Dr. Cooper, who's a doctor, and Gary, the station commander, name any of the other 8 characters and their occupations.
There was the guy that worked with the dogs. I won't call him Pecker, but I don't think that was his name.
I don't think it was Pecker either. It was
like Decker or something like that.
No.
TK, wasn't he the cook?
He was, but what's his name?
Well, if memory serves, it's Cook. His name was Cook. That's why he was, he was.
They called him Cook in the movie? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
See, he's from the caste system, so Cookie. They just name, whatever your occupation is.
His name was Knowles, but you got the actor which is and
Ugandan for Cook.
I love how John's skimming his notes looking for these names. All right, time's up, fuckers. None of you get any. No, you don't get no points. Oh, for fuck's sake.
Are you sure about Pecker?
I'm pretty sure it was Pecker. Who did you were saying who?
The dog handler guy.
Oh, Decker. That was Clark.
Clark, damn it. That was close.
So you had Blair, who's the senior biologist, Knowles, who's the cook, Palmer, the assistant mechanic, Norris, the geologist, Bennings, the meteorologist, Clark, the dog handler, Foosh, who's the assistant biologist, and Windows, the radio operator.
You mean basically all alien food?
Windows?
Yes. Yeah, did you notice
his name was Windows?
Yeah. But they called, what did they call Kurt Russell?
MacReady.
Mac. Mac and.
Oh, Windows?
Really intentional? No, fuck no. I couldn't imagine.
That's too early. Right?
Yeah. 82, that's what I was thinking, but you never know. Question number 4. During the blood test, who was it that was taken over?
You got to assume I was even listening to the last question. I don't remember his name.
The guy,
yeah.
The guy.
What's his name? Anyone?
The one with the bad lighting.
His name was Palmer.
I was just about to get there.
Palmer. Bonus question. Who did Palmer assimilate?
The doctor.
And Windows, the radio communicator. He was the.
Is that speculation, though?
That's when he, chewed his head and guy went up in the air. And then he started flipping out in the corner.
Yeah. No, that wasn't speculation. That's
indicator. I was thinking.
Question number 5. What is the preferred method of disposing of the thing in all of its forms?
Burning it with flamethrower or throwing dynamite at it.
Flamethrower is the correct answer. Yeah. Bonus question. What is the next best method?
Dynamite.
So the comic book guy. It did.
That didn't make no sense. That makes no sense because dynamite just blows you up into different pieces and a little piece.
That's true.
I know.
I thought that was crap.
He does blow it up by the fire. So
maybe if it's a big enough explosion, they burn up all of it.
Maybe.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure there isn't a sequel out there. So I think it died in Antarctica or it's still frozen. With a score of 2-1, comic book guy, you are the winner this week, which means you are one step closer to movie immortality. In Antarctica, a Norwegian helicopter pursues a sled dog to an American research station. The Americans witness the passenger accidentally blow up the helicopter and himself. The pilot fires a rifle and shouts at the Americans, but they cannot understand him, and he is shot dead in self-defense by Station Commander Gary. The American helicopter pilot R.J. MacReady and Dr. Cooper leave to investigate their Norwegian base. Among the charred ruins and frozen corpses, they find the burnt corpse of a malformed humanoid, which they transfer to the American station. Their biologist, Blair, autopsies the remains and finds a normal set of human organs.
What a bunch of idiots. Right there. Here's a malformed human. What should we do? Oh, I don't know. There's a mystery going on. Let's bring back this clearly decayed weird body.
Even better yet, you're at a base where everyone is dead. The whole place is destroyed. They've burned half of it, but yet you find this goopy, wet something or other. And let's not do any safety protocols. Let's just bring it back to our base.
Well, okay, let's back up for 2 seconds here. Okay, it's 1982.
Okay.
Right? There were no safety protocols. They were doing, what do you mean what? They were out in the middle of fucking nowhere.
They knew about viruses at this point.
Not they didn't up in Antarctica.
They didn't know about viruses.
I'm going to say no, because they invited this thing in.
They tried to make up an analogy about AIDS for this. Like mm-hmm. that people connected AIDS to this, which is a little early for AIDS to have been on the pop culture thing. But like, come on, we know about viruses. There's protocols at this point. That was ridiculous. Right off the bat.
So right in the beginning here, we have that Norwegian guy with the helicopter and all that. Did you know what he said in Norwegian, what he was saying to the people?
I didn't know exactly what he was saying, but I know what he was saying, because last night I was paying attention and it dawned on me that the dog is carrying it.
It is.
It.
What? It is
the dog is carrying the thing that he is. Never. Yeah. The dog.
That didn't occur to you before?
No, it never occurred to me before. What and in fact, you know what? Let's back up just a hair. It's been so long that I've watched this film. I forgot about the flying saucer in the very beginning. And then I thought to myself, John Carpenter, what the fuck are you doing? You just gave it all away. What if in a world this movie opens without the spaceship and we open right on these Norwegian assholes chasing this dog? Becomes a different movie.
It would have worked.
Yeah. But anyways.
Well, what the guy was saying in Norwegian was, get the hell out of there. That's not a dog. It's some sort of thing. It's imitating a dog. It isn't real. Get away, you idiots.
You idiots.
You like, idiots.
How do you not know that that is not a dog? Yeah. That is obviously a monster.
Especially when it runs up to Clark and starts licking him.
Yeah. And do you notice who was the first to be assimilated?
Was it Clark?
It was Clark.
Clark was never assimilated.
He wasn't?
Nope. But we'll get there.
But my notes said that the first guy that it jumped on was the one that got assimilated.
No, the guy, well, unless he doesn't jump on Clark, and I saw that wrong. But yeah. He looked like he jumped to the dog handler.
So the opening of the film, mm-hmm. apparently he was trying to mimic the original film, The Thing from Outer Space, I believe, was what he was trying to copy.
I thought The saucer looked like something out of the 50s, so the design. First times I've watched this movie, I think I've seen it 2 or 3 times. It's always confused me how the creature works or what exactly the creature was. In the fact that I always thought, okay, well, it just becomes somebody else. But if they kill that person, how's it now in somebody else? But I guess what it does is it touches the person. It infects that person or intimidates or assimilates or whatever. And that person becomes part of it, even though it's a separate entity. So there's multiple. And the more people it touches or the more animals it touches, the more it spreads like a virus. And so I learned that. And I guess also the lore of it from the background story on it is that the ship that crashed was a prison ship. And basically it was an alien race who were just trying to get rid of it. So they sent it away, and that's when it crashed on Earth and started assimilating everything. But it was trapped in the Antarctic and couldn't get out.
Until dumb humans come and want to investigate.
Yeah. So, like I said earlier, when it jumps up on the person, I didn't think it was a dog handler. It touches that person, and that person becomes infected. It later on goes into a room of somebody and infects another person.
It's more than a touch.
And so, yeah, whenever it gets into them, whatever it is, it digests them and becomes them.
One question I had was, while this is all going on and the chopper is chasing the dog, do you notice how it just keeps going back and forth and keeps flying by? Why doesn't it just hover over the fucking dog?
Why didn't it get in front of the dog?
I don't know. So anyway, they land and they come chasing the dog, the Norwegians do, and then Gary, the station commander, from the inside, breaks a window needlessly. Yeah. Right? That's one of the first things I thought. Oh. Why are you breaking the window, bud?
Well, it's not like it's cold outside and you're trying to keep
the heat in.
My first thought was this going to be a comedy when the guy threw the grenade backwards?
Well, there was that too. So, right, you know, talk about bad timing.
Kills his destroys the helicopter and kills his friend in the helicopter because he throws it back. The guy digs for it. Who goes and digs for a grenade in the snow?
He's a scientist.
He was trying to save the helicopter, man. How are they absolutely going to get back to that charred base?
I'm sorry. You drop a grenade, I'm out the door.
You're gone. And so they shoot the Norwegian in the eye. I mean, nice shot, by the way. And the dog lives. And now there's questions, right? What the fuck's going on? So they have MacReady take the chopper and they go over to the other base and they start investigating.
Which, again, as Silas pointed out, worst investigators ever.
So these geniuses bring this charred body back to base because Dr.
Just charred, it had two heads.
I know, that was weird, like, right?
I thought it looked like almost like two people were making out and they
if
merged.
If it was charred, I would understand. But the fact that it was clearly deformed is where I would go, maybe we shouldn't breathe it in.
Well, okay.
We should just like, what's it smell like?
Yeah, well, okay, so there's that. But here's what I thought. Looking at that two-headed thing, it looked like it was one face that it was just stretched. Because one had one eye, the other side had the other eye. It was fucking disturbing. So, and it was practical. So well done to the makeup team.
Okay, and because I can't let things go, the dog first jumped on Bennings.
Oh, was it Bennings?
It was Bennings, and that's the first person that was assimilated.
Okay.
I do want to say in the beginning here, an example of foreshadowing. Did you get the foreshadowing in this very, like a really early scene?
Yeah, when they find a deformed body.
No, I think what he's going for is when MacReady finds the can of kerosene.
No.
Oh, well, see, it's all foreshadowing.
For me, it was when MacReady or Mac is basically, he's playing the chess game and he loses the chess game and he throws the, you know, whatever it is, the drink into the machine and blows it up. For me, that's foreshadowing in that he doesn't like to lose. And when he starts to lose, he's going to blow some shit up.
Can you imagine?
Maybe.
Can you imagine funding this project and being like, hey, oh, you need a new computer. What happened? Oh, I was playing chess and it beat me. So I poured water on the, like, oh yeah, well, we're going to hire you again.
Well, not only that, but okay, we're going to ship you out a new computer. It's only going to take 12 months. Well, in the middle of fucking nowhere. Why are you destroying your equipment, MacReady?
Well, that, and they couldn't even contact the mainland or whatever. Well,
that's true. They were having trouble with the radio.
So yeah, he didn't get any, but he's a helicopter pilot. What computer does he need? Well, he's just playing chess.
And I'm just going to say this one more time. And just so you hear it, Silas, MacReady is fucking cool. He can do whatever the fuck he wants.
Did you know that it took a year to grow that beard and that hair the way it were?
Ugh, what I wouldn't give to be able to grow that beard and hair.
Okay, so I don't know if this is jumping ahead or not. I don't think it is. But when they were trying to, they could not get a hold of anybody. There was part of me that was thinking, oh, in this world, it's already spread. They're not the first. They're not the second base.
Why?
They can't
why do you
get
think
a
that?
Hold of oh. any other bases because they've gone down already.
That could be already dead.
Oh, I never thought about it that way.
That's a good point.
That is a good point. That's a great point.
The last base.
Oh.
It could have been part of an alien invasion.
And this was it. Yeah, this was the final extinction of humankind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, because they didn't bring any other explanation on why they couldn't get a hold of anybody.
Right. And so they all go inside and we kind of meet all of the characters. And this is the bit where I noticed John Carpenter really likes to move his camera. And what I really noticed was how great of an actor that fucking dog was.
Oh, yeah.
When the husky's peering around and just kind of going through and in and out of each room, fucking looked evil and adorable at the same time.
And that's because it wasn't a dog.
Yeah.
I saw a dog. It's a dog.
I think it's a talented alien actor.
Is that what happened?
Yeah. I thought it was a little guy in a suit.
Out of all of these guys, did you guys find one that just, you were like, why are you there?
Oh, all of them.
Yeah, just about most of them.
I know, like, what are you researching?
Did you have any doubt, even in the beginning of the movie, as we met all the characters, who were going to be the last two or three?
Oh, I figured way back when I watched this movie, there was going to be one survivor, and it was going to be Kurt Russell because his name was on the fucking poster.
I also thought Keith David probably has to make it to the end because he's just cool.
Yeah.
He's just a badass character.
See, I was a little surprised by that because it was 1982. He's black. It's a horror film.
Right.
I thought he was gone.
But but that's why they had two.
Right. Exactly.
So they could kill TK off. And to John Carpenter's credit, they were not the first characters killed.
Yeah.
In fact, they were the last ones. So John Carpenter, ahead of his time.
He was woke.
He was woke for an old white guy.
For 1982, he was woke.
Right. So they bring this thing back. And what did you guys think of the autopsy scene?
It was a gross out. That's what seemed like they were going for.
Yeah.
The whole opening it up and pulling out the organs, these little slimy things and everything. It just, I think they were just trying to put us, you know, off our game or whatever.
I love the noises the doctor was making. Every time he would touch something or pull something out, he's all, ugh. I was like, that's some good acting, guy. Clark kennels the sled dog, and it soon metamorphoses and absorbs several of the station dogs. This disturbance alerts the team, and Childs uses a flamethrower to incinerate the creature. Blair autopsies the dog thing and surmises it is an organism that can perfectly imitate other life forms. Data recovered from the Norwegian base leads the Americans to a large excavation site containing a partially buried alien spacecraft, which Norse estimates has been buried for over 100,000 years, and a smaller, human-sized dig site. Blair grows paranoid after running a computer simulation that indicates the creature could assimilate all life on Earth in a matter of years. The group implements controls to reduce the risk of assimilation.
Also, I love the way that they... How long do you think it's been under there? Like, well, I don't know. I mean, you know, this phenomenon has been happening and pushing stuff up, so... I don't know, 100,000 years.
Hey, they were making their best guess.
I just, random math. Like, I could have just said that. Whatever. Like, a million years. How about? I don't know.
Do you know how long 27,000 hours are?
3 years, 16 days, and 14 minutes.
It works out to be 1,125 days or 3 years and 1 month. So that's how long Earth would have left.
Assuming it wasn't already gone.
It started there.
Yeah.
Right. We got the kennel. And so the dog comes in and they're like, what the fuck is the dog doing here? Blah, blah, blah. Put him away. And you notice when the dog walks into the kennel, all the other sweet little puppies are resting.
Well, at first they're all happy. Oh, a new friend.
Yeah. Well, they were just, kind of just chilling, right? And then the dog comes in and lays down and just starts staring. It was fucking creepy. It was almost like a scene out of like The Omen.
Well, the fact that the dog came in and went right to the center. Did you notice that too?
Yeah. Yeah. And then all the other dogs start freaking out. And then this dog starts transforming. What'd you guys think of this bit?
Again, kind of a gross out.
Yeah. But what did you think of it? Did you like it? Was it hard to watch because they were dogs?
It was creepy. Yeah. I felt bad for the dogs. It was very creepy until I saw the little sprinkler things coming out of it. And then I started to laugh.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
The thing that got me was the dog that was trying to eat out the fence.
Yeah.
You have to be a scared motherfucking dog to want to eat out the fence. Wait, yeah. That sounded wrong.
But it was smart enough to get the hell out.
Well, it didn't. All the dogs were fucked. Right.
Well, three of them ran out as soon as, I call him Pecker, but as soon as he opens up the door, three of the dogs run out.
This is like right away where it starts making no sense. So is it the thing at that point?
The main dog?
The main dog.
Well, it is the thing. It is the alien. But if it, like I said, if it touches the other dogs, they all become not just a, you know.
It can't just be touched because he touched everybody. He definitely touched that.
It's like skin contact.
The dog handler never got infected. It seemed to me like first it infects you and then it takes over you and then it's going to pop out a new version of you.
No, I think it only pumps out a new version of you as an act of defense.
Yeah. It actually, what it does is it grows inside you. It basically eats you from the inside out and becomes you. So it replaces you.
But then
the guy did already know he was the thing. That's why he freaked out. He knew as soon as they tapped that blood, he was going to be outed. And that's when he jumped up and started doing it.
But the guy who was having cramps, he didn't seem to know what he was.
Probably he hadn't been devoured enough yet. Or
in a second, his head popped open and he was like it. So when the dog was forming or whatever, they started forming this weird little gooey dog head in it.
Right.
So I was like, is that becoming the dog?
Yes.
I think it was just showing it what it was. It was basically like a transformer. It was transforming into the thing. It could have stayed the dog, but...
Like, why did it change?
Because it was threatened by all the other dogs around it.
Mm-hmm.
He had to be the alpha. And so the dog turns into the thing, and everyone's freaking out. Childs comes up and does the same thing I would do in this situation if I had it. A fucking flamethrower. Everything burns, right? That's how I would take care of it. And come to find out later, a little piece of this is still alive and can form something. You got to burn everything, right?
Yeah, you got to like pour gasoline on it.
Yeah. And so now these guys are freaking out going, what the fuck are, what's going on? And
I love that the scientist guy or whatever immediately has a theory of exactly how this alien operates. He spells it all out from, you know, 10 minutes of just watching this dog.
Well, he does the autopsy on the dog. He doesn't just watch it.
But how does he know automatically that it got assimilated and blah, blah, blah? Maybe there was multiple aliens.
Because he's a smart motherfucker. That's why. And he's the fucking doctor. And he tells us that us, the audience, and you will fucking believe him because he's the fucking doctor, that these things assimilate us. And I mean, it really is Invasion of the Body Snatchers, right?
He programmed a computer to run a simulation, and they're there studying water, right? So clearly he's a genius.
And so now
he's on the Enterprise.
They want to go to the Norwegian camp and search around again. And this is where they find the large excavation, and MacReady, and I think it's the doctor. They see the ship, and now they're like, what the fuck is going on? Then they go back to camp, and this is where...
Okay, hold up. The Norwegians find the ship, yes, right? Big ship. Then they're like, hey, we should dig 100 yards over there.
Well, I think what happened was, is my guess is the ship crashed, then the alien crawled out of the ship, got like 100 yards away, and then that's where they dug up the block of ice that it had been frozen in.
How'd they find that? That's what I'm saying. This is randomly like, hey, we should check over here too.
They had a little port open, didn't they?
I think so.
But they found the alien outside the ship because there was that square hole cut like 100 yards away from the ship. I just want to know if either of you were Mac and you saw that fucking dog thing, and you had the capability of flying a helicopter, would you just not get the fuck out of there? I think I would have said, I'm still human. Everybody else can fuck off. I'm gonna go get y'all help.
The remains of the malformed humanoid assimilate and isolated Bennings. But Windows interrupts the process and MacReady burns the Bennings thing. The team also imprisons Blair in a tool shed after he sabotages all the vehicles, kills the remaining sled dogs, and destroys the radio to prevent escape. Copper suggests testing for infection by comparing the crew's blood against uncontaminated blood held in storage. But after learning the blood stores have been destroyed, the men lose faith in Gary's leadership and MacReady takes command. He, Windows, and Knowles finds Fuchsia's burnt corpse and surmise he committed suicide to avoid assimilation. Windows returns to base while MacReady and Knowles investigate MacReady's shack. During their return, Knowles abandons MacReady in a snowstorm, believing he has been assimilated after finding his torn clothes in the shack. So yeah, Bennings gets assimilated.
Because we see that this thing that they just so happened to bring back from the Norwegian camp, it's not quite dead yet.
Right. Yeah.
It was mostly dead.
It was mostly dead.
Mostly.
Yeah. And so, of course, you see the little dripping thing and you know this guy's screwed.
I like how he goes, though. I think his assimilation was kind of creepy because it was subtle and his head didn't split open or, you know, he didn't have six eyes. But that scream he lets out is kind of curdling. And then did you notice his hands?
Yeah,
his hands are all fucked up.
Yeah. Was he the one when they go to they throw him on the table, whatever, his head flops off, or is that another?
No, guy? That's a different guy. Okay. That's a different head that flops off. So MacReady's got to burn this guy.
Oh, that's right. The one thing I kept thinking throughout this movie, and it would have probably been too comical, too gimmicky, but this alien can become people and, you know, it understands English and all that to enough where it can actually talk. At no time did it say, fucking don't shoot me. Hold on a sec. Let's talk about this. Or did they not say, hey, maybe we can talk to this thing?
No, because I think the initial reaction to all of this is kill it. And I think that the alien goes into defense mode. And leave it to you to try to defend the antagonist of the film.
Maybe he just wants to live. He wants to be friends.
Oh, my God. You need to go back and listen to some more of our podcast. Silas, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Defending the bad guy.
Yeah, always.
Blair decides, oh, what'll help is, what if I destroy everything?
Because he's trying to contain it.
He wants to contain it. But it was really not thought out. Because it's like, well, how are you going to kill it?
Well, I don't think he, like you said, I don't think he thought about that yet.
I think
his first reaction was control and contain, mm-hmm. right? So he destroys all the communication, the helicopters, all of that, so they can contain this thing here. He had already decided for everyone, really, that no one was getting out of here alive.
Yeah, they were all fucked. Yeah. He already had come up to that conclusion. And my thought was, he figured that it would either starve to death or it would get refrozen in the ice.
Yeah, sure.
So when he destroyed the helicopter, was he destroying it to build a ship? Was he, at what point was he taken?
Do
we not know?
No, it's in between when they put him in the shack to when they go and visit him and he starts going, I want out. You can let me out.
I'm better now.
At that point, he's assimilated. So it happens before then. We don't need to see it. I don't think.
Yeah.
I think Carpenter doesn't show us on purpose. There's a lot of ambiguity in this film, and it's very much on purpose.
So, you know, they capture him, they lock him up, and then they start coming up with all these theories.
Right. And everybody's kind of tripping that, you know, they have no faith in Gary anymore, and he doesn't want to be responsible. And so MacReady takes the job, and now everyone's kind of looking to him as in what to do.
Yeah. Let's look to the alcoholic who flies helicopters.
But he is so fucking cool.
You just think he's cool because he has the hair.
I think he's cool all the way around. When I grow up, I want to be fucking Kurt Russell.
I never caught when the guy they find the body that committed suicide. I must have missed that part.
No, they never show us. We see him leave. We know Fuchsia leaves, but okay, they never show us.
That's what I was confused with that.
Okay, fire away.
I thought.
Fire away.
So he sees MacReady's. And so he's like, oh, that's him, right? It's him. Because he's the first one to discover the ripped clothing with his name on it.
Is that Fuchsia that finds that, or is that someone else?
Okay, go on.
Right? And so I actually thought when he disappeared, I thought it was a fake out. I thought we were going to find him later. I thought he put another body there or something because he was trying to hide from MacReady. It didn't make sense that he's like, oh, MacReady's the guy. Maybe I should kill myself now.
Well, I think they were trying to set something up, and while Fuchs finds the cloth that has MacReady on it, one of the things is there, and it tries to assimilate him or going to attack him, but Fuchs burns himself alive.
Right, and so, okay, because later on, when Kurt sees his light is on in his house,
right.
He's like, I wasn't there. I thought that's where the dude was. I thought he was up there hiding.
Oh. Now they have to figure out who's an alien and who's not. Yeah, and so there was a suggestion. Let's take the blood from storage and let's test it against contaminated blood or whatever.
Who was the one that destroyed it? Because it wasn't Gary and it wasn't that other doctor guy.
I don't think they ever tell us.
Because they said only those two would have had the keys.
And I don't know when they had time to go do that. Between when they've said, oh, we should try contaminate. We should try comparing it to other blood. And then they turn around and walk in to go do it, and it's already contained.
Maybe the dog went and picked the lock with its little claw.
I don't know. Again, they never tell us, and it doesn't really do anything for the story by them not telling us. It doesn't hamper it in any way. I mean, it's an unanswered question.
How did that happen? Who did? Oh, so this pairing off of people.
Yeah.
This is stupid, too. So, one of us is probably it, right? So let's put it in pairs. Well, who's going to get infected?
The other one.
The implementation should have been, okay, we're not all leaving each other's sight now.
Yeah.
We should have all gone as a group.
That's what I thought always. So too.
Well, like, that's what MacReady tries to do.
Does a week pass?
I think it's all over just a couple of days.
Yeah, I do too.
Because homeboy digs a giant tunnel 100 yards off and builds a spaceship.
Well, at that point, he's an alien, so he probably could have formed a couple of big scoops. And
hey, man.
Really?
Yeah, he was supercharged. Me
think, like, a bunch of time has passed. Like, how long it came up to figure out how to do this blood test?
Well, they can get away with it because it's the first day of winter and the sun wasn't going to be up for months. So theoretically, it could have happened over a long period of time. But the reality of it is we'll never know. We just have to assume that the alien was really quick. Because he totally Tony Stark's it, right? He takes all of these old pieces and creates a new piece. A
couple trash can lids.
Yeah, and he creates a spaceship.
So in the deleted scene, there's like a Benny Hill theme running as he's like going and digging out.
Oh, probably. Probably. And so Windows and MacReady and Knowles are making it back to base, and then that's when MacReady notices his light on in the shack, and so him and Knowles go investigate. And by that time, they go back in, and more blood happens, and Knowles comes back, and he says, I had to cut him loose because I found this, and then that piece of clothing comes back up. So now everybody thinks MacReady is the fucking thing.
Mm-hmm.
The team debates whether to allow MacReady inside, but he breaks in and holds the group at bay with dynamite. During the encounter, Norris appears to suffer a heart attack. As Cooper attempts to defibrillate Norris, his chest transforms into a large mouth and bites off Cooper's arms, killing him. MacReady incinerates the Norris thing, but its head detaches and attempts to escape before also being burnt. MacReady hypothesizes that the Norris thing demonstrated that every part of the thing is an individual life form with its own survival instinct. He proposes testing blood samples from each survivor with a heated piece of wire and has each man restrained, but is forced to kill Clark after he lunges at MacReady with a scalpel. Everyone passes the test except Palmer, whose blood recoils from the heat. Exposed, the Palmer thing transforms, breaks free of its bonds, and infects Windows, forcing MacReady to incinerate them both.
So the test for this is the same test that is later developed on Deep Space Nine to check for changelings.
I never watched Deep Space Nine.
I read something that Deep Space Nine test was actually to honor this movie.
Really?
They were doing a call out to this movie. So what'd you think of Mac, you know, bringing in the dynamite?
Hey, man.
A flare and dynamite, and he has them like an inch apart.
I know. I'm just waiting for this whole thing to fucking blow up. And you know what? Good for fucking him. They kicked him out, and he was so far been the only one of reason. So fuck those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And for them to think that Matt couldn't get back in, a little on there. Not with a little
hair,
on them.
Not with that hair and beard.
Oh, the fucking opens doors, man.
He can't even beat a computer at chess, so I figured they were safe.
Yeah, but they don't know he couldn't beat the computer. Just can you imagine they walked up? Hey, what the fuck is wrong with the computer? So he gets in and he's telling all of these guys, you know what? Fuck you all. I'm not a fucking alien, but you guys are dicks. And in the meantime, Nora starts having a heart attack.
Now, this is the thing. It seemed like, you know, maybe that's when the alien was kind of consuming him, but I always thought he was faking the heart attack because he knew he had to do something to get the dynamite away from Mac. So I thought the alien faked it so he could get all of them all to get closer and bite that guy's arms off and
that
do all this stuff.
That's the only thing that makes sense to me, honestly, because it was very confusing to me going,
yeah,
does he not know he's an alien? Why is he suddenly...
Well, before...
What's happening to
him? Before MacReady comes in, he starts to show signs that something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, he must be being assimilated at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, he does fake the heart attack or actually does have a heart attack. Who knows?
Well, that thing must work fast then because it had this like hole inside, right?
Yeah. Well, okay. So this scene is probably the most iconic scene from this film. Whenever you talk about The Thing or when you watch like Greatest of and The Thing is on there, it's this scene. When
Spiderhead,
yeah, or when they're or from the beginning, right? When they're giving him chest compressions, and then on that last one with the paddles, his chest opens up
with teeth.
That bit always takes me out. I don't know why, but a chest opening up as a mouth, it was just weird to me. Yeah. And then when he bites off the arms, great effect, you know, it's all practical, of course. And so they start trying to defend themselves on this as they're fucking watching it.
An alien bites off my arms. Am I really going to die?
Well, maybe. Unless you don't. I mean, they couldn't get a tourniquet? Well, what the fuck?
At that point, you're just like, okay, well, I'm fucked. I'm just going to dive in.
But this bit, yeah, the head falls off and it's not dead. And that's when it grows the legs.
Well, first it does that thing that Silas was talking about, that it lassos around to kind of pull itself along.
The tongue.
Yeah, and then it does the thing that I think, you know, was copied, obviously, in It, which it grows the spider legs out of the head.
Oh, maybe.
Is it because it remembers it had assimilated a spider at one point, and so it remembers?
Or it might be just the easiest way to walk around.
Yeah, it's like a Darwin thing. It just grows whatever it needs to grow to get the fuck away.
To adapt, to survive. And so while this is all going on, MacReady has to torch all of these things that are separating and becoming individual aliens, if you will. And that's when he realizes it's not just one organism, it's a bunch. Mm-hmm. Meaning if it gets separated, or, you know, a limb gets chopped off or whatever, that limb or whatever got chopped off is still alive and becomes separate. Mm-hmm. Hence the head with the legs.
And this is what sort of explains to you that a number of them could already have been assimilated and be separate entities.
Right. And then this leads us to the test. And I always thought, watching this part, it does build the tension really well. I do like this part because Kurt Russell is so cool and calm and collected in this moment. He's figured it out. And just the buildup of taking everybody's blood, although I don't know if cutting your thumb is the right idea, because that would be painful.
Yeah.
But anyways, he takes the blood, he warms up the copper wire, and then he starts, you know, testing. He tests Knolls. Knolls is clean.
I love how every time he tests somebody, they immediately become his best friend and start pointing the gun at everybody else.
Yeah, because he can trust him. And it's at that point, you do not let them out of your sight. What I didn't understand was they tied Childs, Gary, and Palmer together.
Yeah.
And then they test Palmer, and it's him, right? Mm-hmm. He's the it, and then he starts freaking out. Can you imagine being the two guys tied to the
I love Gary's reaction. All of them were like, they were trying to scoot away and trying to get as far away, but they're tied to him. And it's like, let me the fuck out of here.
Right. And then as Palmer's freaking out and changing, he picks up Windows, and it kind of, did it remind you of like a Little Shop of Horrors? His head open up like a Venus flytrap?
Well, not only that.
And just kind of chomp on him?
It bit down on the other guy's, and this is again where it gets a little hokey, bites down on the guy's head, and then the whole guy goes up in the air and his legs are kicking up in the air. I thought, is he just going to swallow him down into his body?
What I would have actually kind of liked to see that.
Because that just the fact that it had the strength to lift him up, and he's almost, you know, doing a suplex or something.
Yeah. And so he tests Childs. Childs is clean. And then they test Gary, and Gary's clean.
Can you get on, you know, fucking untie me?
Right.
What'd you think about the fact that Mac had to shoot somebody who wasn't infected? He had to shoot the guy in the head.
Well, that's self-defense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. And Clark, the guy he shoots, he's acting kind of squirrely.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He was the red herring.
Yeah.
Because we all thought he had to be.
Right. Because he was around the dogs and whatnot.
Yeah. But I like how the other guy is just kind of an asshole about it and says, well, now you're a murderer, when they prove he was a human.
Well, he's not wrong, right? Because they test the blood of the two guys that are dead on the cart, and weren't they both clean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So two die without being aliens.
Yeah.
Childs is left on guard while the others go to test Blair, but they find out that he's escaped and has been using vehicle components to assemble a small flying saucer, which they destroy. Upon their return, Childs is missing and the power generator is destroyed, leaving the men without heat. MacReady speculates that with no escape left, the thing intends to return to hibernation until the rescue team arrives. MacReady, Gary, and Knolls agree that the thing cannot be allowed to escape and set explosives to destroy the station. But the Blair thing kills Gary and Knolls disappears. The Blair thing transforms into an enormous creature and breaks the detonator, but MacReady triggers the explosives with a stick of dynamite, destroying the station. While MacReady sits by the burning remnants, Childs returns, claiming he got lost in the storm while pursuing Blair. Exhausted and slowly freezing to death, they acknowledge the futility of their distrust and share a bottle of scotch whiskey. Roll credits.
Okay. They left Childs alone, and I'm like, for real? Why are you going to leave him alone? So he can die? I would have been like, you're going to leave me?
Wasn't he supposed to stand guard or something?
Yeah, but you can't do that. You're trying to.
They just wanted to create even more possibilities of who done it.
You leave him there as guard. Are you going to trust he's him when you come back?
Mm-hmm.
And aren't you trying to blow the whole place up? Well, then what the fuck are you guarding?
Well, then again, Mac had already decided at that point they all needed to die. They were all going to die. So I guess it doesn't matter if Childs gets infected or not, because everybody's going to die at this point.
Yeah, maybe. So they run around and they start planting bombs all over the
one
joint.
Thing that bothers me is the guy who is the cook. Do we remember what his name is?
Knowles.
He does just the typical horror trope of, oh, there's something making a noise over there. Let me go by myself to go check it out.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I'm thinking, okay, there's something over there. Mac, I see something. Mac, what's going on over there?
It also is not. It was the bad black moment.
Yeah.
Like, black people don't do that.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't go off alone.
No. Right. No, he would have been like, no, do this shit over there.
Mm-hmm.
Just get the fuck out.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Go the opposite direction.
Yeah, but no. No. Not in a John Carpenter movie.
And then we have our Tremors moment.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, and then that's where I'm like, wait, so it's a giant thing?
I'm wondering if some of the other pieces of it, they can all come back and merge into one and make a bigger thing.
I guess I'm kind
of... Like all the dogs?
I guess I'm kind of confused on why we're even asking this question. What does it matter?
Because
they need to know what we're trying to kill. Are we trying to kill...
You're trying to kill this big fucking thing in front of you.
But is that the... Like, where's that from? I thought it was one person.
That was Blair.
Blair was a big guy.
Right. And then he assimilated... And then you... Yeah. Well, yeah. But he just assimilated Gary and Knowles as well. So it could have been part of them.
Yeah. Could have brought all three of them into one.
Yeah. And you know, I thought it was pretty smart of the monster to eat the detonator.
Yeah.
You know.
Without accidentally setting it off.
Right. Because it was just still, I mean, it's a plunger, right? You got to push it down. Mm-hmm. But MacReady says, you know what? No problemo. I'm Kurt fucking Russell and I'm so fucking cool. Okay. I'm going to use a stick of dynamite.
And he still got out quick enough is the thing.
And this is where they needed, this is where they were lack of foreshadowing. Instead of playing chess, he should have been playing football or something so we could see how he has a great, great aim. Because I was thinking, wouldn't it have been great if he's like, take this motherfucker, and like it lands 10 feet short. And you're like, oh.
Uh-oh.
Like, oh.
No, what we needed was him to throw it and yell, assimilate this.
Oh, there you go. There you go. And he couldn't have did, he couldn't have done what you said, Silas, because it was already done with the Norwegians. You can't play the throw the grenade backwards gag more than once in a movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And so MacReady lands up blowing up the entire station, reminiscent of one Ellen Ripley, who blows up LV-46, who blows up LV-426. But what'd you guys think of this whole ending bit?
With him and Child just mysteriously comes back.
I always thought that was a little weird.
Yeah.
But I was happy to see that. You know what? When I first saw this, my first thought was, oh, Kurt Russell doesn't have to die alone. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought.
Doesn't have to freeze to death. At least he's got the fires to keep them alive for a couple hours.
For a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Now, do you want to know like how you could tell Childs was already infected?
No, because it's all hearsay.
No, this is stuff that actually Carpenter has confirmed.
I don't think he has.
No, he actually said in an interview that when someone asked him, was Childs, and he says, I made it obvious. Did you not see it?
Which interview and where is it posted?
It's in my note.
I did read a claim that he said that it's his chest wasn't moving, so he was clearly not breathing.
If you watch the scene, it becomes obvious. Kurt Russell, every time he speaks, he has the cold air, the condensation.
Oh, yeah, that I noticed, yeah.
Childs does not, because he's not breathing. There's never any clouds of smoke coming out of his mouth because he's not breathing at all. And that's what John Carpenter says. That should have been an obvious point to everybody. He was already infected.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter if Childs is infected or not. Neither of them are getting off that rock.
But it does, because it's a matter of, did he kill the thing or not?
Is it just going to go back into hibernate?
Then he's right. Then the whole thing is he's going to go off and murder.
Yeah. But what happens?
Huh?
The camera pulls back and we fade to black.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, we don't know. Yeah.
Well, we can imagine if we think it's just humans left that, okay, they saved the day and they died. Or is it like this was all for nothing? Which is what I don't, I don't buy the gasoline, the kerosene thing, because I'm like, wait, he did all this and now the alien's there and he's just going to be like, yeah, all right, well, I didn't do it. Guess I'll just die here with it.
Yeah, well, I figure he dies, he doesn't care anymore. But
he cared enough.
But if you go to the comic books and the other things that John Carpenter says is canon, right after we fade to black, a rescue team shows up in a helicopter.
Yeah, well, I mean,
they spot the fire and they come and all that kind of stuff.
Spot the fire.
Well, that's how I think they get to the exact location. Well, the whole base is on fire.
Right, but no, but where are they?
I don't know.
Wasn't there a storm?
There was something going on.
There was a storm.
And they show up.
So this is Carpenter coming out years after the fact, giving fans what they want, which is closure.
Trying to pull George Lucas.
There it is.
Make it up.
Yeah, he is trying to pull a Lucas. God damn it.
Did you hear about the alternate endings they filmed?
Yeah, the one where MacReady gets away.
Well, one of them is MacReady. Again, this rescue team shows up. They take MacReady to an army base where apparently the military has known about this thing all along.
Which is why you couldn't hear it.
Yeah.
That's why the communications were down.
Yeah, because they know all. Another one is that they wanted to create a more less ambiguous ending, which is whoever the thing is at that point reverts back into the dog and the dog is seen running away from the camp.
Interesting.
So
I like the way it ends. Mm-hmm. I like the ambiguity of it. And if people have to go, oh, Childs was the fucking it. Well, so what?
Well, the third alternate ending they filmed. The third
that he did, that everything Russell did was for naught.
Yeah. It was for naught anyway because he has to die.
Well, that's why Carpenter wanted the ambiguous ending, because he wanted you not to know if he actually saved the world or not.
Except you said he also says, but it was obvious.
Yeah, he does say it's obvious, but you know, maybe he could have turned around and killed Childs, we don't know. It's all ambiguous. The third alternate ending is Childs walking away through the snow.
I didn't hear about any of those alternate endings except for the one where the chopper team picks up Kurt Russell.
Yeah, they filmed all three of them depending on how the test audiences had reacted to the original movie.
And they thought the studio might want an optimistic ending, right? It's like,
well, fuck me. E.T. was coming out. You had to have an optimistic ending, right?
But what'd you think of ending ambiguously?
Oh, I like the ending. Mm-hmm. I like that it's not a happy ending. And not that I always need a happy ending, but there are films out there that end on a downer that I do enjoy.
I do like the ambiguous endings, but I am saying bullshit on Carpenter's excuse later. I think they forgot to admit, because they said Kurt Russell would take a smoke before each of his sets.
Simulate
the smoke.
I think
the other dude just didn't want to smoke and didn't do it.
Yeah.
And so I think later on, that's his excuse on, oh, it's obvious.
Which is funny because I think he smokes and they live.
Explain the goof.
Yeah. Who knows?
It's possible.
Yeah.
Welcome to a new segment we like to call
Face the Wheel.
The premise is simple. I will spin the wheel and whatever category comes up, John and Don will apply it to the movie we are reviewing. Once they have presented their idea, it's up to you, the listeners. Let us know via social media or our website which idea you like best. And here are the categories: mashup, plot, rename, genre, reboot. Fuck it. I liked it better when it was called spin again. Pick any. Add any character from any movie. And here we go.
Tonight's category. I liked it better when it was called. So what that means is we liked the thing better when it was called blank.
Alien.
That's where I went to.
Yeah.
Right away. I liked it better when it was called Alien.
I've already said my answer earlier, which is Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Because everybody was basically just became pod people.
Interesting. All right. There you have it, folks. We liked it better when it was called Alien or Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
And there you have it, listeners. Let us know via social media and our website who you thought had the better use of category. And that concludes this week's
Face the Wheel.
All right. What do you guys think? You guys ready to rate this flick?
I am. John, are you ready to rate this flick?
Well, if you untie me from this fucking couch, I'd be happy to participate.
This is normally where the professor would explain our ratings, and I'm going to let Silas do it. Go.
0 is 0, and 5 is the best.
Being a three-guy tradition, we typically ask the guest if they would like to go first. So, Silas, I will give you the option. Would you like to go first or not go first?
Not go first.
All right. So, in that case, I am using martial law to declare, John, you're going first.
Pass. Just kidding. Before I get started, Don, would you like to guess what my rating is going to be?
I believe that you are going to give the thing 4 fucks.
Is that your final answer?
Final answer.
Okay. 1982's The Thing is a chilling horror classic that keeps you on the edge of your seat. John Carpenter's direction amplifies the tension, creating a claustrophobic atmosphere as well as a sense of paranoia and dread. Carpenter's use of practical effects, while may feel dated today, still holds some show value. Combine that with a who-can-you-trust mystery that really draws in the viewer, and you can see why this movie still draws a following today. My biggest issue with The Thing is that it falls short on character development. While Kurt Russell delivers a strong performance as the lead, many of the supporting characters lack depth, and making it very hard to connect with themselves. I found myself struggling just to remember who was who and what each were supposed to be doing. It also felt obvious a lot of the time guessing who's next based on their importance to the storyline. In previous viewings, I also had a hard time understanding exactly how the creature operates or its purpose, but it's also possible that it's meant to be vague. I'm not completely satisfied also with the ending. While I have no issue with it leaving us with a mystery, it leaves me sort of wanting to know what's next. Overall, The Thing is a must-watch for horror fans. While I likely put Invasion of the Body Snatchers from 1978 as my all-time creep-out paranoia film, this movie still has to be in my top 5. So for those reasons, I'm giving The Thing 4 out of 5 fucks.
That's a bingo. 4 fucks from the comic book guy.
Would you like to go next, Don?
I could go next. Do you want me to go next? Or sure. Do you want to give you?
Yeah, I'll go so you can end it on.
All right, positive. I love it.
I'm going to give it 3 fucks.
Why?
It was goofy. There was a lot of the things that I just thought was goofy about it, which, granted, is in a lot of horror films. Kurt Russell is not a good actor. He's not a great actor in this film. I'm not captivated by it. Again, I think I'd probably give it a higher rating if I watched this originally when it came out there, but now it's like, I almost watch it more as it's a research movie. It's one of the movies like, oh, you're thinking about this? You should check out The Thing. You don't go check it out just because it's a good movie. Not just because it's like, oh, yeah, no, this is one of the best. You got to go check it out. No, you check it out because it inspired a bunch of other things. I think the audience has kind of got it right when it came out. It was just, it's about a 3. They're like, it's all right. I'm not like, it's not the worst. It's not the best. It's about a 3.
There you go. 3 fucks from our guest, Silas. Well, I guess it is my turn now.
You go next.
Thanks, buddy. I saw The Thing way back when, and I remember being impressed by the practicals and the way the story is paced. I think that John Carpenter does a good job in telling a horror story or a story with suspense. I found myself a lot of the times being uneasy when you're going around dark corners and you don't know exactly what this thing is. You just know it's a thing. It's just kind of a no-win situation for mankind. John Carpenter takes this old story, this very familiar story of aliens coming to Earth, and though someone else wrote it, he took this story and he kind of added his own little flair to it. And what I would say, if anyone was thinking about watching The Thing, I would say, yes, you definitely should watch it. And I think that some of the practicality and the way it was made, unless you're a film lover, it'll get lost on you today. I think that The Thing is one of John Carpenter's better films. In my book, I know Silas and I disagree, but in my book, I think Kurt Russell can do no wrong. I love that guy. I am coming in at 4 solid fucks for The Thing. With 4 fucks from the comic book guy, 4 fucks from myself, and 3 fucks from our guest Silas, That is going to give The Thing an average of 4 fucks, as we are just averaging my score and John's score. With 4 fucks, that puts The Thing in the 12th spot, tied with Dodgeball, Zombieland, Edge of Tomorrow, Clerks 2, and The Batman. It is slightly better than The Descent, Moonrise Kingdom, and The Suicide Squad. And it is slightly worse than Violent Night, Clerks 3, The Fifth Element, Big Fish, and Spider-Man No Way Home. All right, that is going to wrap it up for this episode of Three Guys in a Flick. If you would like to know which movie we're going to be reviewing next, please check out our website. Speaking of which, hey, John, where can you find us?
Well, you can always find us at www.threeguysinaflick.com, where we go ahead and post all of our show notes. All of our podcasts are available there. Anything else we feel like posting, as well as there's a web form on there that you can go ahead and recommend a movie for you'd like us to review next. You can also find us at all of social media and any place that hosts podcasts. And in fact, if you're listening to our podcast right now, which I'm guessing you probably are if you can hear me, then please go ahead and give us a comment, a rating. You know, that 5 is not that hard to click. Or, you know, just let us know what you think. We'd love to hear from you.
All right. I want to thank Silas for coming on board and filling in for the professor. Did you have a good time?
I did.
Are you just saying that?
Yeah.
So you didn't have a good time. Oh, okay, great. Would you like to tell the listeners where they can find you?
They can find me at yourwatchingamovie.com. I host a podcast called You're Watching a Movie with Silas Lindenstein, where I review new films, both in written form, and I do some podcasting and video cast on those. And then I do a thing called Film Club as well on that site, where I talk to people about their favorite films of all time or movies that meant a lot to them. And we treat it like a book club, but make it fun by doing it with a movie.
Right on. Right on.
I am totally going there and starting a Kurt Russell discussion.
I can't wait. I can't wait to listen to that motherfucker. Out of curiosity, what is your favorite film of all time? Do you have one?
It's a Wonderful Life.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. I also want to throw out a special thank you to Ben C. for throwing this into the Bronco helmet. I know it didn't sound like Silas really enjoyed this movie, but I think he did.
I'm going to keep you paranoid and mistrustful.
Why is his eyes coming out of his head?
I don't know, but he's starting to freak me out. What is that thing oozing from? You know what? Never mind. Thanks, Ben C., for throwing this into the Bronco helmet. We had a lot of fun watching it and talking about it. I hope you have a lot of fun listening to it. I also want to thank anyone else who listens and who has suggested a movie. If you keep listening, we'll keep recording. For Three Guys in a Flick, I'm Don.
I'm John.
And I'm Silas. Thanks for listening.
Nobody left to kill, and then it's one.
Do you want to try it again, or do you want to just edit that one?
Tonight, we are talking about The Thing, I'm sorry.
Well, do you want to explain why Silas is here?
Do I have to? Everyone passes the test except Parker, whose blood... What'd I say?
Parker.
What's the fucking difference?
One is a guy named Palmer, the other one's Spider-Man.
I wouldn't say lose my shit.
I'd say lose your shit.
I get perturbed.
You made Julie cry.
I did not make Julie cry.
She made herself cry when she interrupted me.
That's right. She was already crying before she knew it.
It's okay to not have every thought.
And at 2 hours and 14 minutes, I have to cut all of this.
Well, do you have a porn name?
The only porn name that kind of pops into my head is staring me right at the face. No pun intended. The Thing.
Well, I have two.
Okay.
So I'm going to go in order of the one that's okay and the one I think is the best, which is the first one is just The Thingy.
All right.
And then the second one was The Thing in My Pants.
Mine was The Ding-a-ling.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah, that's not bad.
I did say it already has a great tagline for a porn, though.
Go ahead.
The tagline for the film?
Yeah.
Anytime, anywhere, anyone.
There was a lot of spoojin' in this movie.
There was a lot of spoojin'.
Especially in that little dog cage when it started like just pumping it out as that dog was trying to run away.
People are going to be listening and go, what the fuck are they talking about? All right. May all of your days and nights be filled with happiness. All right. Fuck off. Good night. You don't-